Good afternoon. I am Jenny Rajeski. I'm a health policy analyst at the National Immigration Law Center, and I am thrilled to be here with you this afternoon. And I'm also thrilled that this particular session has been highlighted by APHA. The reason why it was highlighted was because of pressure from APHA members who have believe that this issue, this intersection of health and immigration, is of increasing importance. And so I thank you, APHA members, for bringing these issues to greater visibility. I have no relationships to disclose. In my short presentation, I wanted to quickly review some of the barriers that immigrants face accessing health care and health insurance, building on Mr. Dawe's presentation. I also will address immigration reform, so we'll look at the immigration reform legislation and bills that have been proposed so far and how they deal with access to health care for immigrants, and can we solve this problem and address these gaps in immigration reform. And then if not, looking forward, looking past ACA, looking past immigration reform on what options folks have to care right now who are uninsured and what more we can do about it. So, first, barriers to immigrants' access to health care and health insurance. I think one thing that I just want to mention here, I'm not going to go through all of these different barriers that immigrants face, because it would take an entire presentation in itself. But my point here is that uninsured immigrants face the same barriers to health insurance and health care as anyone else who is low income and uninsured. But on top of those barriers, which are primarily affordability and access to insurance through employers, there are a number of other barriers that immigrants face that are specific to being an immigrant. And they are serious and they are big barriers. And all of these barriers need to be addressed if we're going to reduce health disparities for the immigrant population. The very first barrier here that I'm just going to spend some time on are the legal barriers. The slide is kind of hard to read, I realize, but what we have here is immigrant eligibility for Medicaid, CHIP, and the Affordable Care Act. So on the left column there, we have Medicaid, CHIP, and the Affordable Care Act programs. And then along the top, we have the different immigration categories. So that first column with all the green arrows, indicating full access, are refugees and asylees and other humanitarian immigrants. So certain populations who are here for humanitarian reasons, perhaps they are fleeing persecution in their native country, perhaps they've been trafficked here, or certain survivors of domestic violence would fall in that category as well. The next three columns are green card holders, lawful permanent residents, or LPRs. So we've got adults who are green card holders, children who are green card holders, and then pregnant women who are green card holders. The second to the last column there are other lawfully present immigrants. So this is kind of the catch-all category for everyone else who is here lawfully but doesn't fit into one of those other categories. So I think common categories you might recognize here are visa holders, the whole alphabet soup of visa holders, your H visas, your Ks and your Js and your F visas, your students and your employment visas, those kinds of categories would be in this column here. Also temporary protected status or TPS would be in that column. And then applicants for green cards are also in that column, plus a bunch of others. And then that final column are undocumented immigrants who are people who are here who are undocumented, and then I should also add in that column, as Daniel mentioned, individuals or dreamers who have been granted deferred action through DACA are also in that category of being left out of everything. So you can see here with Medicaid and CHIP, this is current eligibility. In Medicaid and CHIP, it's still super complicated. There's a five-year bar for most lawful permanent residents or green card holders with a few state options to get rid of the five-year bar. So we made some progress there with the Affordable Care Act when we went from the X's and the purple state options to check marks. It streamlined eligibility for immigrants. If you're here lawfully, you're eligible with no waiting period for the Affordable Care Act, except, of course, undocumented immigrants who are completely left out. So recognizing that, what about immigration reform? So You know, Daniel was mentioning some of the advocacy that was done in the ACA to try to improve access to coverage for immigrants. And what people were told, what we were told, what the Congressional Hispanic Caucus was told to try to reassure them and make sure that they voted for immigration or for health reform was that we'll fix this, we'll fix these gaps with immigration reform. Just wait, we're going to fix this. So is that true? Looking at what has happened with the immigration reform proposals, will we fix these gaps with immigration reform? And unfortunately, we won't. This first slide here, though, is just a status, quick overview of where we're at with immigration reform right now. On the Senate did pass a comprehensive immigration bill this summer with bipartisan support. In the House, it's much more up in the air. The Republicans are in control of the House. Of course, they have the majority. There is not a clear strategy here on getting to a immigration reform bill that has a path to citizenship in the House. And we just have just about a dozen days left of session this year. And so the timing is really tight here to try to get something passed in the House. If something were to pass in the House, then of course it would come to conference, and the Senate and the House would have to come to agreement on some sort of bill. And then those bills, if they did come to agreement, would go back to the House and the Senate to be voted on and passed before it can go to the President. So we've got a challenge here before immigration reform can pass. But even if it were, so let's take the really optimistic stance here and think that maybe we will get something passed. What would that look like, and what would it do to access to health care for immigrants? And so to think about that, we're going to look at what the Senate bill that did pass, what that does for access to health care. That was a bipartisan bill, and so hopefully it will give us some idea. And we can assume that even if something were to pass the House, that it would not be more progressive than what the Senate bill passed. So I think it's a good place to start. So two pieces in the Senate bill that are important to look at is that the 11 million people who are here who are undocumented would have a couple new immigration statuses for these folks. The biggest one would be registered provisional immigrant status. I left out a word there. RPI, registered provisional immigrant. This is where most of the 11 million would fit. So they would have a 10-year pass in RPI status before they would be eligible for a green card, which is the last step right before being able to get citizenship. So a 10-year path to a green card, 13 path at a minimum to citizenship. Dreamers would be on a shorter path, a 5-year path to a green card or citizenship. The next big category of folks that people might fit into are blue card status. These are agricultural workers who have a 5-year path to a green card under the Senate bill and 8-year path to citizenship. This is just a graphic showing the path to citizenship in the Senate bill for RPIs. All right, so this adds a couple extra columns to our eligibility chart on how the Senate bill deals with these folks. So the second to the last column there, these are your RPIs and your blue card holders and your V visa holders in the Senate bill. They were, even though they would gain legal status and have it for 10 to 15 years before they could get a green card or citizenship, they would be completely barred from any access to affordable health insurance under the ACA. They'd be able to buy insurance at full price in the exchanges, but not with subsidies. And what the Senate bill also did, that wasn't quite enough for folks at the end. So instead of just restricting everyone who gains legal status from the ACA and from public benefit programs, they started to exclude people who had nothing to do with the immigration reform bill. So people who are in some of these other lawfully present categories, like student visa holders, who right now are eligible for health insurance in the ACA, they took those out and they excluded those in order to gain a few extra Republican votes at the end. So it's not looking so good. It doesn't look so good that immigration reform is going to fix this issue of making sure that people who right now are undocumented have access to affordable health care or affordable health insurance, even if immigration reform were to pass. And of course, we have the uphill battle for that. I'm not going to get into details here, but I just wanted to provide a little list of some of the other provisions, and these were amendments that were considered through the Senate process that are even more onerous and are even uglier than what the Senate bill did pass in terms of access to health care. So we're going to have people who are uninsured. We have people who are uninsured now. We're going to have them even if immigration reform passes. That's kind of where we're at right now. So the next step then is just a reminder of who are the uninsured and what are their options for care and what can we do with the political challenges being so great. Just a reminder of who the uninsured are now. Of the uninsured, about 1 out of 5 of the uninsured are non-citizens, and 1/8 are undocumented immigrants. So the majority of the uninsured, of course, are citizens and lawfully present immigrants. Most of the uninsured are under 400% of poverty. Many, 40%, are under the poverty level. After the Affordable Care Act, how does that change? You see here that the share of the proportion of the uninsured who are undocumented immigrants does grow. So it grows from 1/8 of the uninsured to 1/4 of the uninsured. But they are still not the majority of the uninsured, even after the Affordable Care Act is fully implemented. And these estimates come from March 2011, an Urban Institute national estimate. And so this was before the Supreme Court decision that made the Medicaid expansion optional. So this means that those that the share of the uninsured who are undocumented will be even smaller because of the Supreme Court decision. So where do people get care now? A reminder that there are no immigration status restrictions in the private market outside of the marketplaces or the exchange. There are no immigration restrictions for employer-sponsored coverage. There are public programs available regardless of immigration status, including emergency Medicaid. There's a federal option that basically, in effect, provides prenatal care to undocumented women if they're pregnant in more than a dozen states and D.C. And 4 states in D.C. provide coverage to undocumented children using purely state funds. Public health services are not do not have immigration restrictions, and neither do disaster-related services. Uninsured immigrants can still get care at community health centers and FQHCs and migrant and rural health centers. There are low-cost and free clinics where people can get care. There are no immigration restrictions on financial assistance at the majority of hospitals in this country and hospital clinics. And then I think there's some very exciting models that are being developed and have been going on for a while, actually, in certain states and especially in localities and counties. And this is really where local stakeholders who have a stake in the healthcare system and a stake in the uninsured have come together to figure out how do we provide care and access to people who don't have health insurance. And these are healthcare providers, these are pharmacies, these are local governments coming together and figuring out something locally and away from the political spotlight and political controversy around immigration issues. So to close here, there are I think there's still a lot to be done. There are tremendous political challenges here. I think there's a lot of opportunity at the local level, like I was saying, but I think people need to be talking about this. I think the healthcare providers and the healthcare industry are best placed to be talking about these issues and to be raising the visibility of this. We need more people having this conversation so that we can change the political climate around immigrants and access to health care. And I think I will stop there. But there's my...
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Jenny.